Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. For those of you who do not know that, maybe a few of you may not. I think most do, though. And tonight we're going to continue on with part two of the spiritual stewardship of life. And for those of you who listened last week, yeah, you already have a pretty good understanding of what that's all about. But I'm going to fill those who have been listening but maybe missed last week's show and don't know what I'm referring to. So I'll give you a little bit of a, we'll say, recap of last week's show. And then we're going to really go into some new ideas, some new thoughts that I have, and some things that I really couldn't go into much detail in last week. Because, you know, the time goes by pretty quickly. And when it does, then I say, oh, gee, I should have said this, I should have said that. I actually spend a good part of the next hour after I get off the air saying, thinking of all the things that I would like to have said. That's my typical hour after. Okay, so hopefully for today's show, I won't have as much to do in that hour after because we're going to go over it as well as I can. To begin with, let me say that it is the responsibility of human beings to attempt to bring life to a higher standard of spiritual development. And what that means is a greater level of enlightenment, a greater level of cooperation and sharing, and of love, and of truth being developed between all parts of life. And to help that life to grow more a part of the creator of our universe. That's what we're here for. Our responsibility is to take in hand everything around us and to improve it in some way. Now, you might say, well, it doesn't seem like we're quite getting there. Well, I would agree with you. We have some problems because human beings, even though we're supposed to be doing this, are in some respects not accomplishing all the things that they come here to do. One of the reasons is that we are in illusion. We continually misunderstand our purpose and think that we're here for something usually selfish and personal rather than unselfish and loving and tremendously, we'll say, focused out in giving to all other things. Most people do not understand that because it is so difficult to sense the world in a way that is accurate. Our senses, to begin with, are relatively limited while we're physically alive in this dimension of time and space. Not so much so in some of those other more subtle dimensions that we will live in when we leave this dimension. But here it is quite difficult. Energy overwhelms us. It confuses us. And we think it's all about us and forget, because at one time we knew before we came back in this incarnation, that it's really about everything and everyone, including our Creator, and not about our individualness, our individual selfishness. We are individuals, but we are not here just for that purpose. Very difficult to get that to become part of our reality. Last week we covered one of the elements involved that humans are supposed to be correcting, and that is that life itself is continually, we'll say, involved with forces. Those forces come about mostly because in this dimension of time and space, energy is difficult to change its direction of, to get it to do just about anything, from increasing it to decreasing it, you name it. It's hard to change the energy, including the forms that life lives in, because that's really a dense type of energy, to do anything that other than what it's already doing, which most of the time is just sort of hanging out with more energy, we call it gravity, and creating a thing called inertia. This creates a problem, because when energy is in that kind of state, like it is in the seventh dimension of time and space where we live, it tends to create a circumstance where in order to try to change any kind of movement, in order to cooperate and share with anything else, in order to intelligently communicate with other life forms using any kind of energy, usually incurs forces, meaning that other life forms and other things around us are moving in different ways, different directions, different speeds, different everything, oftentimes not in sync with the Creator's thought, with Spirit. And consequently, there is a tremendous amount of frictional force, literally. When I talk about forces, I'm talking about heat, I'm talking about energy wasted, I'm talking about inefficiency, I'm talking about destruction of form, including aging. I'm talking about death of form. Those are the things that I'm referring to. And this is going on about us continually. It would be going on, by the way, whether or not humans were here or not. What we call evolution is actually a contest between different life forms in which life form can deal with the forces around it better than other life forms. But it's still about dealing with forces. And that's the problem, because as long as life is entrenched in the element of forces, the Creator and the Creator's thought is second fiddle, or third, or fourth, or tenth, or millionth, because the forces overwhelm the life forms and create contests of trying to stay alive. Some people call it survival of the fittest. And the result is that the spiritual side of life does not get represented equally, much less even more so, than this other forceful side. So life takes on a sense of desperation in attempting to live itself out, regardless of what kind of life we're talking about. This is evolution. Now you might say, well, that doesn't sound very godly. Why would God create a universe like that? Well, it's mostly here in the seventh dimension it's like this. And God created this dimension to challenge everyone and everything, saying, okay, I'll make a dimension of time and space that's really going to push the limits of life. But once life overcomes it, it will create even more fantastic ways in diversity of growing more of me and everything else in the universe, because everything is connected as being one together in God's mind, and ultimately in reality. This is a great opportunity, that means, provided you don't get swamped by the energy, and you don't end up fighting all the forces instead of trying to become spiritual. The way you get around the problem is to use more intelligent responses in every kind of activity. That's the answer. More intelligent responses. If we, as a kingdom, humans being the kingdom, chose to live more intelligently, and that means to communicate among ourselves and among all the other forms of life and pre-life around us, using everything to the maximum level of efficiency without taking and destroying, without, we'll say, abusing any other form of life, and helping that life to flourish itself and become the greatest it could possibly be within its own capacities. If we chose that route, because we are now in charge of the world, the results would be phenomenal. Now, last week I explained that since 1975, human beings have pretty much been in charge of what goes on in this planet, for good or bad. Before that, the world was too complex for us to understand, and we didn't have a clue about a lot of parts about it. Since then, we've been starting to say, we didn't understand this, we didn't understand that. And we're starting to figure out the mistakes we were making. And at the same time, we're starting to understand how to run the world correctly, but we're also choosing not to in many respects. So this is where it comes down to, it's either we're going to survive, or we may end up really making things really bad. It is up to us to spiritualize life by doing what I said, making life itself more intelligent and helping life to cooperate with other life through our guiding it, through our helping to develop it even, and through us changing it. I know that for some people this may bother them. A lot of people say, well, we shouldn't touch life. We should leave life alone. We should leave the whole world alone. Those people want to go and live in huts somewhere and just sort of vegetate. No, We're not supposed to do that. We are supposed to actually develop to a very high level this world, well beyond its present standards, and actually change some forms of life to become better, better behaved. Last week I mentioned things like fire ants and, oh, you name it. There's all kinds of fairly nasty little critters around that are very forceful creatures. Well, we can genetically alter them if we want to. We have the permission of the great being that created us all, who said, hey, I'll give you these capabilities. Let's see how you use them. And if it were to take away the sting from the fire ant, but allow it to grow in other ways, so it could earn a living in ways without having to collectively sting things, including us, it would be a nice, more friendly creature to live with. And that's just true of so many other ones, like mosquitoes and things. So we can do that if we choose to. We have that option, and we're supposed to. That's the big part. We're supposed to do some of it. Now, we're not supposed to create Jurassic Park and have the animals eating us, or eating each other for that matter. We're supposed to be doing things that are more loving and that help those that we create or changes in become even better stewards themselves in how they interact and interrelate with other forms of life. It's hard for us to understand this perspective because we're on a planet that's called Third Ray. And this particular planet right now is primitive, so relatively primitive. So the Third Ray becomes a militaristic place, and a very conflictive one, when it's primitive. And this is the way things are. So to our perspective, it almost seems sacrilegious to say, well, we'll change mosquitoes from being biting little boogers that infect us with 20 different diseases to something that may be a lot nicer. And maybe they don't have to do that. In order to feed. And we have trouble seeing that that is our role in this world of so much conflict, even before humans were present on it. It has to do with the nature of how a world like this tends to develop, and it usually moves through evolution in its beginning stages. I know it's been a long time, billions of years. We're still in the beginning stages, at least as far as life development overall is, not in terms of time, but in terms of the quality of life in this world. There are worlds, and you're going to say, oh, how did you know that? Well, let's just say I've heard it from a bird someplace. There are worlds that exist outside of Earth now. I'm not talking about other planes of dimensionality that belong to Earth. I'm saying other worlds. There are thousands and thousands of other planets that are physical like Earth. And there are even greater numbers, vast more, greater numbers, millions, billions of planets that are different from Earth and don't have just a physical form. And at any rate, these planets don't all respond in the way they grow life through the conflicts that Earth has. Even the ones that are third ray, and there are many, don't necessarily have as conflicted a life as Earth has. This is because Earth is actually going through a second time of trying to develop life on itself. Its earlier planet incarnation, we could call it, wasn't too successful as soon as humans came around. So guess what? Here we are again, and hopefully we're not going to wipe out the planet and do crazy stuff. I'm hoping. Now, last week I started talking about some of the things that we could be doing to really make an improvement in this world. And that's what I really want to focus on now. I'm going to give out the phone number because I really got into this. And I, again, didn't mention you can call in. You can. You can talk to me. You can say, hi, I disagree with you. I want to say something. Or you can say, I think what you're saying is very interesting, but here's some other idea. You can say anything you want, provided it's civil and on the open to being on the air, and then also that it has something to do with metaphysics or spirituality. And if you are in the U.S., give us a call at 877-876-5227. If you are hanging out in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Give me a call. I'm right here. Yeah. And if, perchance, you want to just, you know, write me something, you can't. I won't get it while you're on the air. I still don't have that hooked up yet. But if you want to, thoughts@whylifeis.com, you can email me. And I'll mention something about it next week, maybe. But at any rate, let's go on now with some of the ideas, some of the thoughts I have about how we can improve our world. And I want to tell you some things that are more directly linked to, like, stuff I'm involved in, because a lot of people say, well, what are you doing? Well, one of the things that we're doing, which is a group of people that I'm associated with, spiritual group of people, we're interested in trying to make herbal medicines, I call them. So many people call them supplements or whatever, I don't know. But I call them medicines. I can call them anything I want, but if you put it on the bottle, they get really nasty with you out there, some of the people, like the FDA, et cetera. So you can't say medicine on the bottle, but I'll say it to you. We make some herbal medicines. And these things treat and help to cure all kinds of things that you can't treat and cure with other kinds of medicines. And in some cases, they are amazing. They are so incredible that they really improve people's, we'll say, health, and makes their health either normal, if they're not normal, or it rebalances them to a point where they feel better in general. They do a lot of different things. And we're actually producing some of these things. We're making them ourselves, and we're in that process of putting together a plant to do that. It's really fascinating stuff. And why are we doing that? Well, one of the things we were concerned about was bird flu, avian flu, and that it looks like sometime in the not-too-distant future we're going to get hit with this thing. So we made a product that we thought might be helpful with that. We can't say it on the bottle, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But the point is that we made it, and it seems to be very effective against some very serious flus, but not, we haven't been able to test it on bird flu, because you know what? There isn't any human-to-human bird flu that's been proven to exist, at least not for any substantiated period, and there's none that we can get near to try this product on. But in terms of regular flus, really bad ones, the worst ones that we could find, that aren't nearly as bad, by the way, as avian flu, it has worked to cure these flus extremely quickly, amazingly so. So that's one of the things. And how that affects life is, well, you know, there's billions, with a B, of people that are in jeopardy right now if an avian pandemic flu breaks out. Anywhere from, you know, numbers are pretty strange, so I'd say from several hundred million up to a couple of billion people could succumb to such a terrible pandemic over a year or two's time, not very long at all. And that's a scary thing, extremely scary. It may not be the worst thing we're facing. So let me go on to some of the other things that the spiritual group, which is Ageless Wisdom Distributors, for those of you who don't know that, and I am involved in. I mean, we're also, and the name of that business, by the way, the one I just referred to, is called Alternative Health Approaches. So if you are interested in more about that, you can let us know, and we'll tell you more about what we're doing. And then another business that we are doing, which is, again, just to try to improve the world, try to improve life in the world. This has even a greater effect overall, believe it or not, that maybe even dealing with a pandemic flu or many other kinds of intractable diseases. This has to do with alternative energy. And the name of that business is Alternative Energy Approaches. How do you like that? And what we're doing with that business is we're trying to come up with ways, first, for people to be able to conserve energy that isn't overly expensive but can be financed or in some way bought for houses and businesses. And this whole program is designed to save over half of the energy that people use on a daily basis, excluding their automobiles. Over half of the energy. Now, automobiles are a special class, and we are looking at that as a different kind of business rather than the one I'm talking about. And we're dealing with conservation first and ways of making people's lives much more efficient without reducing the level of comfort or the level of practical use of the surroundings. This is not so easy to do, but it can be done, and we're pretty darn good at it because we've been doing it for ourselves and our ranch and farm, et cetera, for some time. Now, we know a lot of little things to do that, added together, can save half of the total amount of energy. And that's a lot of energy, if you think about it. And the cost of doing this is our goal, and I think we're achieving it. The cost of doing this is less than the monthly cost for whatever number of years someone is going to finance. It depends on how much they're going, how far they're going to go into doing this, up to 10 or 12 years even. But the monthly savings is greater than the cost, so the net is a gain financially for the people, person or persons who do this, while they're cleaning up the planet tremendously, reducing their carbon footprint. That means all that carbon that's going into the atmosphere and warming up the planet, and at the same time, allowing the use of their everything that they have in a much more efficient way. Remember, efficiency is part of the game plan in using the third part of our Creator's mind most intelligently. It allows one type of energy to communicate better with another type, and for humans to communicate with the energy they're using in some ways, and for humans to be in better communication with each other and all other forms of life, so that less energy is expended to do any activity, whatever it might be. That's what we're aiming for. And so alternative energy approaches is beginning with the area of conservation. And we have a lot of things that we help people do that saves them more money than it costs to do it. So ultimately, they're ahead of the game. And then, of course, in the end, once it's totally paid for, the savings are endless and continuous. Wow. Now, the next part of what we're doing with alternative energy approaches is the generation of new energy sources that are renewable, and mostly dealing with solar right now, because wind is a little tricky. Unless you have a really good storage method, wind can be tricky. But wind is a possibility. We are also examining that for certain locales. There's a lot of places in Arizona that are more prone to benefiting from solar, but this is an Arizona-based company, so we are looking at the solar more intently. And it looks like the solar part of the business is going to be in swing about a year from now, because that's when the thing called thin film solar photovoltaics will be available in mass quantities at a price that's affordable, we think, at any rate. That's a guess. And we know how to do this because we're doing it already, so we're just going to be doing it for other folks. In the beginning, it's going to be necessary to generate peak power levels of energy, because without the peak power levels, there's going to be, unfortunately, and this is going to scare some people, and I don't want to frighten you, but I'm going to let the cat out of the bag and tell you that within the next year or two, there's going to be rationing of power. Not where you could just turn on the switch and get as much as you want anymore. They're actually going to ration power through a thing called DR. If you haven't heard about this, don't feel bad. It's been kept a secret for a couple of years. They passed a law about it last year that Congress did, U.S. Congress. And that law says it empowered electric companies to start rationing power to their customers using direct response, which is a computerized meter with little feedback devices that turn on and off major appliances in our homes. Now, tell me that doesn't sound Orwellian. Yeah, I know. It's really scary. And I don't want to get too deep into it in today's show because that's like a whole hour of talking about this one thing. But it is definitely scary. One way to get around it, if you don't want to be rationed, is to generate the difference between the peak load and what you're using. And if you can do that through a minimal amount of solar panels and inverters and certain other things, you can then not be rationed effectively. But even better than that, so that's our intermediate step, is to supply systems that supply maybe 3 to 5 kilowatts of power to homes that will meet these peak demands and prevent the necessity for rationing. But the longer-term goal, and we think we can offer this at a reasonable cost with some credits that are available in certain locales, is to offer full, total power from roof-mounted thin-film panels and other ways of doing it that would allow people to to literally use no power, net power, from their electric company, meaning that they aren't going to be rationed because basically they're the suppliers of their own electricity and maybe even selling some of it back to the electric company and reducing everybody else's need for rationing at the same time. Whoa. Now that is a big, big deal. If you want to know the truth, it's going to be 35 to 40% that we're going to need to ration power because we didn't build enough power stations since about 2003 because coal-powered stations are, in the minds of many power companies, going to have to be sequestered sometime in the next 5 or 10 years because of CO2 emissions, and the cost of the coal-powered plants would go up so much that it wasn't worth it for them to build them. They didn't build them, and so we don't have them, and there's not enough power to go around now. I bet you didn't know that. I know. It's okay. Very few people know about this. This is being hid from us by the powers that be, mostly by the electric companies themselves. But it is the truth. If somebody's come to your house and changed out your meter, they put in a direct response meter with a computer control module in it, and they are able to read what's going on in your house any minute of the day and control it if they choose to once the modules are in place. Okay, so I guess I throw that out because many people are probably going to email me and say, what the heck are you talking about? So I might as well put it out there so that they know about it. Okay, so we are trying to get people to cooperate and share together. And if enough people were to generate their own power, then we relieve this coming crisis in this country. We start relieving some of the crisis for other countries that are also not caring about what they're doing, such as China and India and other places where they're not that concerned about the pollution they're putting out. And we would be a shining example of that. If we could make this not just ecologically successful, but financially successful for the whole country. You see, you could create an entire, we'll call it, infrastructure dealing with alternative energy, dealing with conservation, and dealing with the elements of ecological improvement and reversal of ecological destruction. We don't have long, and I want to bring that part up. As far as global warming is concerned, we've got just a few years left. I don't want to sound like I'm a crazy person, you know. And I know some people will argue that, well, I heard it's 2050, maybe 75. Well, you know, that may be true by some people's standards. But the people I'm listening to are scientists who have gone out, as an example, and measured 8,000 measurements at the North Pole. And what they found was that the North Pole is melting at a speed 10 times faster than what was anticipated. Somewhere in the 5 to 10 time range, anyway, causing enormous shifts, which with the possibility of a tipping point being reached in 5 years or so from now. Tipping point means that we'll have runaway heat. And another 5 years from that point, Greenland and part of Antarctica, all of Greenland and part of Antarctica will melt, and we'll have sea level rises over 20 feet. And then a few years after that, amazingly, even after the Earth is so much hotter and the sea levels have risen, we're going to have the opposite effect due to something called a conveyor system failure of too much, we'll call it non-salty or fresh water going into the salt water of the oceans and reducing the currents in the oceans. And the result would be, potentially, and this is going to be a shocker, a new ice age. But that, all that could be around 2020, 2022, something like that. Could be even a little earlier than that, as early as maybe 2017 or 18 or 19. And this heating thing before that would be just devastating because the heating thing will cause deserts to develop where people are presently living and trying to earn a living. It would cause all kinds of terrible problems. Well, I don't want to get too deep into this. I know it sounds terrible, but I've got some ideas of how to stop it. We're going to go to break for right now. And when we come back, I'll tell you more about some of the more positive elements. And hopefully, I will get off my kick of just talking about the more terrible things that might happen. So we'll be back in just a little over a couple of minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we're going to continue to talk about the spiritual stewardship of life, part two. And at the break, I gave you the bad news about global warming, and I'm going to tell you that global warming is definitely for real as far as I'm concerned. I know that people will debate that. If you want to call and tell me your thoughts or feelings about it, please do. But I'm going to tell you that based upon everything I have investigated so far, I'm convinced that global warming is happening. This year, because of sunspot activity, and we're in a cycle, a shift, it wasn't so bad. As a matter of fact, we even had a cooler winter. But the fact of the matter is that the averages are swinging higher and higher upward, and it's going to be scary. 20-foot rise in oceans is just unbelievable. Now, I know that most people are saying 18 inches a foot. That in itself would be bad, but 20 feet is beyond comprehension. But then hurricanes and many other terrible things could be taking place. And this could be happening because the heat buildup is happening much faster than we expected. And that's due to the fact that we've never been through this before. We don't really understand everything that's happening. We know that, give or take, about 11,000 years ago, about 9,000 BC, there was a huge change in the Earth's climate. Now, I'm going to tell you that it came about because of the destruction of the remainder of what was the island then, we call it a continent, but the island of Atlantis. Some people will refer to that island as Poseidonis. But in either case, when that island sank not just below the surface of the ocean, but it went into the mantle of the Earth, a huge mass of Earth itself sank below the ocean, and that was in the Azores where that took place. And the Gulf Stream, instead of circling around it and creating a Mediterranean climate around it, then went into the North Sea and went towards the polar parts, north polar parts of our planet, and it warmed it up, and the ice age stopped in literally years. And I'm talking about, like, a couple of years. And that has just been discovered. Now, I wrote about this, believe it or not, in the early 1990s. Back then, everybody was saying what I was writing was complete nonsense. And now, all of a sudden, you know, oh, yeah, okay, well, we've rediscovered that for some reason, now they're thinking it could have been a comet, it could have been this or that, they don't really know for sure. There was some striking into the area around Greenland. They don't even know for sure. They're thinking maybe it's Canada, Greenland, the ocean, they're not sure. And it caused a shift, a sudden shift in the weather. Now, that was caused by what we might call a natural catastrophe. What's happening right now is a human catastrophe. We are feeding huge amounts of carbon-producing chemicals, from methane to carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere, which is causing a greenhouse effect and increasing the temperature of our planet. The only thing that's possibly going to give us a little more time is if the sun itself gets a little bit cooler. Let's all keep our fingers crossed on that one. Now, that's up to some beings much beyond us if that were to occur. I don't know that it will. As a matter of fact, I suspect it won't. But regardless, that may be our only hope of averting what seems to be a very bad circumstance. Now, can we change this? Can we make a difference right now? And the answer is yes. Another business that we have, a series of them actually, has to do with AWD Ranch and Desert Plants Conservancy, along with and in connection with AWD Farms. And we own this huge property where we are experimenting with ways of growing plants in desert climate. Because right now, as we speak, huge numbers of acres are turning into desert every day because of global warming and a reduction in rainfall. Even areas that were cooler this year still had less rain. I bet you didn't know that. In the areas I'm speaking of. Now, if you live in the northeastern part of the United States, you might say, oh, wait a second, it rained more this year. Well, that's great for you guys. But the problem is you never were on the verge of becoming a desert in the first place. Whereas the people living in the deserts are suffering because they're becoming worse. They're becoming more deserts because of a lack of rainfall. And this is due to the changes in pressure zones, et cetera, caused by, you named it, increases in carbon in our atmosphere, which is producing greenhouse effects that is warming things up, changing the pressures of various areas, and causing what were normal weather patterns to become quite abnormal. I'm not just talking about hurricanes. Those are getting worse, and so are other things. I'm talking about just normal weather patterns of how rain is affecting. This is happening in South America, and in South America, the rainforest, the main rainforest in the Amazon, the biggest part of the planet's rainforest supply of taking carbon dioxide out of the air, is dying out in huge amounts. And I'm not just talking about slash and burn stuff, which is happening still. I'm talking about it's dying up because the weather is changing and it's not getting enough rain. Rainforests have a need for rain. And when you don't give them enough rain, they turn into savannas and then eventually into deserts. That's what's going on right now in the Amazon. That's scary. So that's contributing. See, all this is a snowball effect. And I mean that in a literal sense as well. Another thing that's happening is that the poles, particularly the North Pole region, is heating up. And so the permafrost in any part of the tundra that's close to that area is starting to melt. And as it melts, it releases more and more methane. And methane is a gas that's 22 or more times a greater producer of greenhouse effect than is carbon dioxide. Wow. Okay, so what are we doing on our farm and ranch? We are investigating ways to harvest water and to use the water effectively through a thing called hydrophilic polymers to keep the water a viable source for plants up to 5 months of the year during droughts. Yeah, you can do this with hydrophilic polymers. So we're using a high-tech system, but we're using a low-tech system called dry desert microcation farming, which harvests the water and brings it closer to the plant base, to the roots, so that it soaks into the ground instead of evaporating and is held then by the hydrophilic polymers for up to 5 months. Plants that could never grow in the desert could be grown this way. Wow. Now, you do have to have more square footage per plant than you would in an area that is in the desert, but at least you can grow something. You may not be able to grow as much as you would if it was in the middle of, you know, a temperate zone, but at least you can, and you can save the planet by this method. If you went into all the deserts presently available and used these methods that I'm talking about, most of the deserts, about 80 to 90% of them, especially the hot deserts, there's a thing called cold deserts too, like as happens in Antarctica. But hot deserts, we could go into 80, 90% of them and change them into more temperate-like growing areas where, guess what? With all the plants we would grow, we would create tons and tons and tons of oxygen, taking out tons and tons and tons of carbon out of the atmosphere because that's what the plants are made out of, and change the biomass of the planet through this system. Wow. Am I getting through? Hope so. That's what we're doing. We're doing this. We have an experimental farm, and we're doing this. And we're going to prove its viability. Now, we've had some other issues, unfortunately, dealing with people, because there's some ranchers that don't like what we're doing and other things, crazy people, actually, who want to stop us from doing what we're trying to do. And the weird thing is that, as an example, they sometimes put out cattle, and there's less and less of a season to grow grass, and these people are going to be suffering more and more from global warming. Of course, some of them don't believe that, but the truth is in the fact that the grass that even grew a month ago is all dead because we didn't have the rains that we were supposed to have right on and around our property. This is amazing. Now, as a microenvironment, we found that if we plant enough plants, we also change the microenvironment, not just by taking carbon out of the atmosphere in general, but we also are reducing the ground temperature, reducing high pressure zones over the land, and it allows, like over a mountain like where we are, it allows more and more clouds to accumulate and to rain because the pressure drops. And we restore some of the weather patterns in certain areas that could not be restored any other way except by cooling things off. And we're doing that by shading the ground, by having plants that grow and shade the ground and also transpire some amounts of cooling moisture all together that lowers the temperature and causes even more rain. So sort of like rain begets rain. The more you get, the more you're going to get because the plants grow more, and the process just continues in a positive direction. That's on a micro scale. I call micro scale could be hundreds of square miles, but it's still micro scale compared to the whole planet and having to take all the carbon out, which was the first thing I mentioned. It's still, these are amazing results, amazing results. I hope that you are interested enough to let us know that you might want to come out and help, might want to do something, might contribute in whatever way you can, because we are doing this stuff. For real. And most people don't know that. So I want to let you know. Now, is it just about us? I don't want this to be a show that just is concerned with our spiritual stewardship of life. But I'm giving you some ideas because a lot of people say, well, sometimes you just talk about it, but what are you really doing? Well, there you go. Are we doing other things? Yes. But I don't want to make the whole show about that because then I'll have that on my, you know, resume. Oh, he only talked about himself. No, I don't want that to be the case. So what other things can we do as a society? Where can we make a difference collectively? Oh, I think I heard a beep. That means someone is on the air. Are you there?
With Hi, me? Niles.
Hi, who is this?
This is Freddie from New York City.
Hi, Freddie. How you doing?
I am good.
Did I ever meet you Did I ever meet you, Freddie? Because I met someone.
Who?
I met someone with a name like Freddie in New York City years ago. I gave a talk there at some place. I can't remember where it was right now. But we haven't met, correct?
I don't believe so. No, no.
Okay, well, go ahead. Tell me what you'd like to say.
And maybe just a little bit more about the... up here, we got heating costs that are out of the sky these days, and the oil, as you know. But the weather here is still cold.
Yes.
It hasn't reached 50 degrees yet.
I know. You're having a colder than normal winter, aren't you?
Exactly. It's caused problems for both heat and oil, so heating homes, et cetera. But I'm just curious about... I feel like you said about the water, we're all going to have to make a sacrifice, which I think is happening, but and the electricity. But when it seems like we, the people, the ones that are out here, we have to make the sacrifice already. When is the government going to finally come into the mix? We're being forced into it. When are they going to come into it and make some intelligent decisions?
Well, how about this? I suggest that we all look to the government as being an extension of who we are, and maybe it's time for us to decide to change what we don't like about our government to make it more in accord with what's going to be best for everything and everyone rather than any specific smaller group who has a special interest of some sort. I think it's time to look at the big picture as people rather than the small picture. And if we try to do that, then maybe we can overcome our differences and elect people that think the same way we do. First, it starts with us changing our special interests to, we'll say, general interests of trying to do good in the world, trying to create a world that is going to be more survivable by improving the quality of life in general and not be so concerned about very specific matters, which sometimes are not really going to make any difference if we're all going to be facing some kind of global disaster. What do you think of that?
I think that, yes, you bring some good ideas there, but listening to your show for some while, I know I thought by now even bird flu would hit, but it hasn't.
Well, let's hope it doesn't, but I predicted this fall, so... It's after the Summer Olympics that we're really going to be in danger because it will most likely start in that part of the world. And after you get that many people collected together, I'm scared that the first real human-to-human continuous contact bird flu might happen sometime after September of this year. I've been saying that for a couple of years, so let's hope I'm wrong. I don't want to be right about this.
Do you think that even the Tibet uprising is going to intersect with that and cause more problems?
Well, the Tibetan uprising is an issue that, I think they're trying to make an issue right now because, of course, everybody's looking at that part of the world. Let's face it, the red Chinese, the people, mainland Chinese people, are embroiled in the fact that they're controlled by a dictatorship that is very dark and is destructive in many respects to what we're trying to do overall. So this is a problem that Tibet has faced for some time, since the 50s, and now they're completely under the thumb of this dark rulership, and the only thing they can do is to bring it to our attention, and maybe we'll do something about it as a country. I think the United States could have, for a long time, done more to deal with the communists or red Chinese that we have chosen not to for business reasons and other factors. I think we have not been really doing what's right in terms of dealing with them as a political unit. That's not to say we should just bomb them or something. I'm suggesting that maybe we shouldn't be so happy to do business with them, and maybe we should be more careful about letting them steal all our secrets. there's a lot of things that we should be doing, probably we haven't been in terms of that country.
Right, right. I just want to say just one final thing and tie it together just a little tiny bit and say, after hearing you tonight, the second part of this thing, it seems like we only have like 5 years left.
That's about right.
So water and other things that are going to happen, I don't even see us getting that far.
Well, we've got about 5 years, and then about 5 years is about where we're at, right in that ballpark. And then after that, it may be just slightly less than that. You might be right. And then after that, it's going to be very difficult to change things. Then it will be more in a desperation mode. Now, I'm hoping that with what we're doing and with all the listeners to this show and many other people around the country, because I have a show, I don't know if you know this, I have a Sunday show also in the Northeast. You might be able to pick it up from where you are.
I will listen to that one, absolutely.
But, you know, the thing is that we're trying to get people to become aware and then more conscious. Consciousness is the ability to see the big picture, the whole scale of things. And hopefully you'll tell your friends, let everybody else know that, hey, there's some things we should be doing. I mean, did you see Al Gore's, documentary? What did you think of that if you did?
Yes.
I mean, that was a fantastic documentary. Was it a little exaggerated? I'm not sure. Everything I'm seeing says that the guy was right on the money. He did it several years ago, and so far it's turning out to be much more true than not. So, a lot of people said, oh, it was exaggerated, this or that. I don't think so. I'm afraid that he may be the prophesizer of doom. But unfortunately, you know, even then he said, well, this isn't a doomsday story. We can all do something to change it. But right now, so far, we haven't done enough. So let's hope we can do more. And,
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Well, listen, thanks for giving a call.
I thank you for everything.
Keep listening.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye. Okay, so what other things can we do? I've only got a couple of minutes here. You know what? I don't have enough time to even tell you what else we could do. But I hope that last caller got people thinking that there are a lot of things that we can be doing. Next week I'll do a different show, but I've come back to the subject within a month or so, I promise. And I do have to tell you a couple things before we go off the air. Time goes by so fast on this program. Okay, on April 7th, over at Glendale, Borders, Books and Music, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m., Mimi will be talking about creating virtue. She's one of the members of the spiritual group I am a member of. So if you have a chance, go by there, because she loves to have people come in and tell her what the heck they're doing, and she gets a chance to talk and teach a little bit about things. Also, this Sunday, The Lost Continent of Atlantis, I think it's part two, maybe it's part three. I'm not sure if last week was part one or two, but that's going to be the topic on 11:70 a.m. If you are anywhere in Boston, Norfolk, Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island, you can pick up the show directly on the air. If not, and you prefer, or if you prefer, WDISAM.com, and you can listen in anywhere in the world to that show. It's going to be on from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, GMT minus 7, for those of you who know how to figure that out, and 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And so that will give you a chance to hear even more of me yakking and talking about metaphysics and spirituality. So to sum up today's show, let me just say this. There are many, many, many things that each of us can be doing. If you want to communicate with me, please do, thoughts@whylifeis.com, and I'll tell you some things that you can do, simple things to conserve energy, free, even though we do it as a business, you know, we don't care. If you need help, give me a call. You can call me. The number is on the Ageless Wisdom Distributors website, and you can call that number, or you can email me, and I'd be glad to share whatever we know to try to be of some help. Maybe we can collectively form some kind of union together to work across the whole country, the whole world, if possible, to make things more the way they should be, so we all can become greater spiritual stewards of life. And until next week and next time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.